Alright, what's up everybody? Laugh Not Die Later. Live from Memo's basement. Little friendship in Memo's basement. Thank you, Memo, for letting me use your basement. And yeah, I think that's my favorite part of that's my way of introducing my guest. Same where we're recording from all the most random places. And today my guest is Dante. Dante Sim, I guess. DJ, event, event planner, event
producer, curator,
yeah, everything, full spectrum. The reason I think I chose you, I've been knowing about you for a while, but I really forget. I was having a conversation somewhere, maybe with Memo or Dylan, and I think they brought up that like you book around shows or around Mexico.
Yeah.
And I don't remember the conversation or place or who it was, but I remember that sticking with me at the time because I was like, oh, that's like hardcore. And I mean, like a DIY punk band or a hardcore band, but like in a whole, and you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And to me, coming from hardcore or punk, I was like, oh, this only happens in hardcore and punk. Like, this is only a hardcore thing. Like, you know, this is the only way, like, this only could happen in hardcore. So I'm like, oh, so this happens with basically whatever the hell you want. You know what I mean? Like, I guess it's a mentality more than a music. But yeah, introduce yourself.
How's it going? Dante Sin, DJ, producer, curator, booker. But it's interesting you say that because I feel like I also like I've watched a lot of like hardcore like performances that happen like in the Midwest and shit like that, and they do have like that industrial like vibe where they'll get a random like abandoned church or stuff like that, or like abandoned warehouse, and bring sound and create an event. But also, I mean, primarily for me, since I work in electronic music, you know, like underground rave culture, and like is also, it's like, it's the same thing. I think at the end of the day, it's just like, it's like a very punk thing, you know, of just finding a space to occupy and having like a lineup in mind and a certain experience, and then just creating it for the people in your scene, you know?
Yeah, basically. Which, because I think the more deep you dig into hardcore, or like the more you start going to shows and more DIY, like the rave, you see the Unami people who are like, oh, there's a rave show. I'm like, what? I mean, it's like, oh, the same, like it's kind of the same people sometimes.
Yeah.
Or like some people interwent to that scene. And yeah, let's talk about, you're from the IE.
Yeah, well, I'm from Pomona. Yeah, I'm
is that IE?
That's not IE. It's not IE. Pomona is like the last city in LA County before the Inland Empire. But yeah, right now I'm living in Riverside, like on my grandpa's ranch. That's kind of where I've created my home base. Like, but I work in LA. I'm hardly there right now, but because I'm almost always in LA. But I like living like outside of the city.
Yeah, kind of like to rest.
It's just for reset. Like, I don't know. I feel like I get overly stimulated, and like I feel like sometimes when like I just want to feel like disconnected, it's nice to be able to go home, and it's just like not the city, you know. Mm. The city's just a lot sometimes.
Yeah, too much noise.
Yeah.
And how was growing up in Pomona? How was your family?
Oh.
Yeah, because you mentioned your dad.
Oh yeah.
Your dad is also a DJ.
Yeah. Growing up in Pomona was interesting because I don't know, Pomona has tendencies of being like a very like intense and like violent city.
Really?
Because I think Pomona is like one of those cities that like when a lot of people left LA, Pomona was like a hub. Like Pomona when I was growing up there was like, I don't know, like 80% Mexican, you know. And my grandpa moved from Mexico to Compton. And then so when he left Compton, because he wanted to just buy a house, where he found a house that he could afford was Pomona.
Mm.
So I feel like it was just like a city that a lot of people that migrated here from Mexico came to LA first to set up home base. When they left LA, they went to Pomona. And then I think that later became like, you know, San Bernardino. And it just got deeper and deeper that way.
Yeah.
But yeah, growing up in Pomona was interesting. Low-key, I realized as an adult that that's where my love for music came, because like I lived in between two like different gang territories, so I never was allowed to leave my house. Like my mom was like super overprotective, which now I'm grateful for, because all my homies growing up all ended up in gangs. So it was like a very small detail in my life that kind of, you know, I used to hate it as a kid, not being able to go and play on the block, whatever, go to the park. But that's kind of where the love for music came, because it's like I was just like, okay, well, I have my CD player, or I had like a lot of like documentaries on DVD of like different bands. So I literally started just doing that, like listening to music all the time because I couldn't leave my house. So that was like a really important part in my like musical development that I didn't really realize at the time.
Being stuck at home, were you like shy? Were you like, because I think I saw pictures of you like when you were younger and like you had like huge, like before the dye there, you had like huge hair. I was like, what?
Yeah.
So
no, I wouldn't say I was shy. It was just really just honestly just having an overprotective mom, to be honest. It's just, she just was not gonna let me go roam the city, especially because I think she understood that it wasn't safe.
Was your mom like old school or like, mm-hmm. cause like, you, like I know, cause you say your dad's a DJ, is still doing it.
Yeah.
Like that seems more like of a open-minded seem of lifestyle, and your mom's like on the opposite end, or
yeah.
Well, how was that?
Well, yeah, my mom was born in Torrance. So like when my grandpa came from Mexico in that time frame, there was like a law that if your kid was born in the U.S., you would get papers. So like my grandpa only came to work and he was going to go back to Mexico. But then he heard of that and my grandma was pregnant with my mom. So he sent for my grandma to come and cross the border pregnant with my mom and had her in Torrance. So then they were able to get like documentation, like papers and stuff. So my mom is like Mexican-American, but very Mexican, you know, like she's Chicana, but not really like... You know, we speak in Spanglish, but she's really Mexican at heart. And she just kind of had, like, I don't know. Like, I wouldn't say she was, like, super strict, but definitely, like, you know, just made sure I wasn't getting into trouble.
Like, having good grades into her, like, that, or just...
Yeah, on all that level, too. Like, I've always been pretty good at school as well. Like, school kind of came easy for me. I got, like, I don't know. Well, except for math. But like English and like history and science was all pretty good for me. So I did good in school. Like I went to college like right out of high school, but I dropped out. And then I was just started doing more music stuff. And then I went back. I finished one degree and then I dropped out again. Well, I mean, I'm just putting it on pause. I just like figured that like pursuing music would be more important to me than getting a degree. And I just feel like you can get a degree at any age. It's like I could just, you know, and I'm almost done with it, so I just didn't really, I just figured right now I think it's a good time to just like do what I want to do, which is like music, and explore that and just see what's on the other side of doing music related things, you know.
And you started throwing around like parties / events at 15.
At 15 I was a part of events. That's when I like first was introduced to like raves and like clubs, all ages clubs, and which were really crazy. And
why are they crazy?
Because it's an all age club, you know. It's like it's a bunch of kids that like, you know,
doesn't that sound kind of like a recipe for like older folks to like come hit on like younger people?
Dude, I mean, from what I remember, it really was just a bunch of younger kids. I don't really remember older people coming to these events when I was there. Like I never remember seeing like older cats. I'm sure they were there, but it really was just like a little subculture that happened.
Like just kids going hard.
No, bro, I'm telling you, like it's when I first like tried like Four Loko and like, you know, when it was still an energy drink and like drinking Mad Dogs and you're having your homie's cousin who's 21 buy it and you're like 16, 17, like drinking in a parking lot. So it's on alcohol that's obviously extremely strong. And it's just like an era where like, you know, it's kind of what it was. It was like, obviously, I don't think it exists anymore. And for, you know, probably for a good reason.
All ages club?
All ages. Are they? I don't know. I mean, I don't really see them. They were really trendy at the time. They were everywhere. They were here in HP. They were in LA. They were in San Bernardino. They were in Pomona. It was like an era.
Oh, it was a thing.
It was an era, you know, and it was like.
Where did it come from? Or like, how did it start? Like someone opened one or like someone was like opening a bunch or like.
I mean,
it sounds like. Kind of crazy.
It's because that was during the era when EDC was still at the Coliseum in LA. Mm. So I think just rave culture, club culture was kind of like, it was a certain era where people wanted that, you know? And it just like, people put them together and everyone just flocked. This one like shuffling like first got super big.
Okay, I get you.
You know, it was like that era. I think it might have been like...
Well, like Skrillex popped in that time?
That's when Skrillex had just started. You know, like, because Skrillex and Deadmau5...
That was that long ago. Holy shit.
Yeah, because Skrillex and Deadmau5 were super important artist for me, but it was also because that was the era when they
were mainstream.
When before they went mainstream.
Oh, okay.
So it's like being able, I was listening to Skrillex, all those releases that now are like, you know, are, you know, what made him get the signature that he had. I was pretty much downloading that music on blogs and stuff in real time. So like, it was like seeing these artists like reach that level, because electronic music really wasn't that mainstream. Like, you could only hear electronic music on the radio, like on Power Tools and stuff like that, which was like, I think, like a late night show that you would have to tune in really late to hear electronic music on the radio. And I remember vividly like getting picked up from school and like hearing like the first time I heard like an electronic record, but like at 2 p.m. in the afternoon. It was like a Britney Spears, she did like some type of like dubstep kind of track. I can't remember what it's called, but I remember like listening to it and I was like, oh shit, like electronic music is going to where, you know. And now it's so much time has passed that I feel like electronic music is like really normal, you know, where like in that era, if you listen to electronic music, it was like a little bit, you know, it wasn't really as common.
Cause like, I think of like, I mean, I'm pretty ignorant to the topic, but as much as I know, like that era, I remember when I was a kid, like I was a kid, like when that came out. So I remember like seeing that, like, you know, everybody, like all the older kids or like my older cousins were like, yo, this is a shit. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like, you know what I mean? Like, this is like, we're cool. Cause we listen to this.
Yeah.
But I think in that moment, electronic music became like, you know, like pretty and like nice, you know what I mean, like accessible. Because the only thing I remember, like when electronic music in general was big, was like Skinny Puppy and like that era when it was like industrial, but like they were selling like out big places.
Yeah.
But how do you go from your mom being strict, not letting you out, like, you know what I mean, like don't go like out to like being 15 or like 16, 17.
And DJing at a club at 15.
Like
the truth is, like, well, my mom would pick me up at midnight. So when I was DJing clubs when I was like 15, 16, 17, like my mom was parked in the parking lot.
Really?
Yeah.
That's
like, so she was strict, but she was super supportive, which was like, okay, well, like, let's work a deal out where it was like, okay, I'll let you do this thing. Cause you know, imagine her, she was tripped. I was like, mom, I got booked to play this event. And she's like, what? Like, and I'm just showing her, I'm on the flyer. Like, and it was just like, yeah, she would just wait for me and I would go in, I would DJ. I'd look at the time and it was like, okay, gotta go. And then when I turned like 17, 18 era is when like she finally did just let me, you know, I could leave at 2 or I could stay at the homie's crib. So I was like DJing with a homie and I was like, bro, I'm gonna stay at your house. And I would tell him like, hey, I'm staying at his house. So I was already like done deal. So
she were like, kind of like, were your parents together at the time?
Yeah, they were.
So like, were you like kind of low key, like inspired by your dad?
I don't know. I've had like a super deep, like grown up adult thought about that, is that my dad never taught me how to DJ, like, or, you know, I never listed him as an inspiration, but like sometimes I think that maybe I also just did it for like acceptance that became into a passion. You know what I'm saying? Like, I did it where I was like, okay, well, if I DJ, then maybe my dad will fuck with me a little bit more. You know, internally, I don't think I process that as an adult where it's like, shit, maybe that could have been it, you know? Cause
you
know, like nowadays, every time I go and I DJ Puerto Rico or Mexico City, I always send him a video of like, when it looks crazy, it's like, look, like I'm doing things that are like, you know, and like, that's rarely like the times I talk to him is whenever I'm just putting him on. I'm like, look what I accomplished. So
are your parents still together now?
No.
Did you think like him continuing to DJ at an older age? Were you only child?
No, I have a younger sister, yeah.
So like, well, having two kids, you think that ruined the relationship? And like, you were kind of the byproduct of like seeing your dad not be there?
Well, I mean, not to put my parents' business out there like that, but like, my mom and my dad met at the club. Like, my mom was going to the club that my dad was DJing at, and they kind of started having a fling, and then, you know, accidentally got knocked up with me, you know, at a really young age. Like, we're talking about, like, you know, like 21, 22 years old. So then, like, I feel that,
little friend, Memo's conversation is gonna be,
I know, for real. But yeah, I feel like that's their own,
Well, yeah, the reason I bring that up because, yeah. Like, your mom, whatever, having, like, you know, seeing your dad also a DJ.
Yeah.
And then seeing her kid, like, at a young age, like, getting booked, like, it must be, like, a weird, like, know what I mean? Like there must be like something there for her to like support you. Like not a lot of Mexican moms at all are, you know, taking their kids to like go DJ.
No, let alone
like, oh, my husband also DJs. Yeah. And also like,
I mean, I just think realistically around the same time that I started DJing is also, I guess, the same time that like my parents' marriage officially was kind of falling apart, like in full, you know, because it was always just like a hard life having to like them constantly not be on the same page.
Yeah.
But it was also because, you know, they weren't supposed to be, like, it was kind of like, you know, I'm an accident baby, like a lot of people. But in that era of like Mexican culture, you're forced to get married and stuff. So it's like, I think that was the dilemma. But then, so I think because I started DJing during that hard part of my life, I feel like my mom was more so supportive because that support needed to be there, you know what I'm saying? Because everything else in my family life wasn't good.
Like, she needed to get along with you. Like, how could she not get along with
you? Yeah, or how could she not support me when she knows that what we're going through at home, you know? And at the end of the day, it's like, it gave me, you know, it's where some kids go play soccer, you know? It's like, they go to soccer to get their minds off things. Like, for me, it became, like,
DJ.
And it was constantly, like, doing live streams, like, back in the day. And, like, you know, like, gigs and like jam sessions with my friends, but like at a young age. So I feel like that's probably where the support, I've never asked her, but I mean, I could see how that was my interest at the time. So she was willing to back it because she knew that I needed something, you know?
Did your mom put you on like a conversation of like, oh, this is like be careful with like, you know, the nightlife, I guess? Or like, did you learn that on your own?
No, I feel like my mom's always been very transparent with me about that, about all the dangers and stuff. And like, even to this day, you know, like there's things that I carry with me. Like, my mom is very like, you're going out, never, like, I have it programmed in my brain that if I go out, I'm never putting my drink down. That's just, since I was little, my mom would always tell me like, don't leave your drink unattended. And I still have that energy. And it actually, that lesson that was engraved in my head actually saved me at I had a band for a little bit, and we were jamming a lot and playing shows. And after the show, we were going to take photos, and I put my drink down to take the photo, and I never put my drink down. So as soon as I put it down, I felt a weird vibe. We take the photo. When I look, I saw a dude hit the shoulder to my drink, like turn around, and I was like, did he just walk over, bro? The left side of my drink is all foamy. And I confront this fool. He looks all like tweaked, and he's just like, no, like, and he was like the son of the owner of the space or something. And like, that was like, thanks to my mom engraving since I was little, like, never leave your drink unattended, like, never put your drink down, like, you know. And
do you know why, or what was the intention? Like,
I don't know. I never know. And like, you know, I'm glad that I was able to like see it before I drank it, you know, because like, yeah, who knows what it was. Could have been anything. Could have been something that fucked me up mentally. It could have been just MDMA. It could have been acid. Who knows? It just being drugged against your will is just such a trash thing. And but like, thanks to my mom and like her like little, you know, like telling me things like that, I feel like I was prepared for those kind of things. Obviously, I feel like in nightlife, it's like really hard to avoid those things unless you're like super like strong-willed. But I think like the things that she engraved in my head did help me to a certain extent. But obviously, duh, you know, I still went and still tried different types of substances throughout my life. But that was more of like a personal choice and like my own thing, aside of like what, you know, obviously I know I was doing the wrong thing, but you know, it was just like a phase in my life. And like, it's, I'm just hyped that like now, that's not, it's so far from what I want or like even crave, you know, like it's, I don't need that anymore. It was just like something when I was younger that I had curiosity about.
Yeah. Well, it seems like, you know, cause to a lot of people, like say something like hardcore or punk or art or, like hip hop or anything that's more like accessible or not like, I mean, hardcore is looked down on, but now I feel like you could make, you know, it's easier to like make the argument to like, oh, there's like something here, or like there's something great about liking it compared to like nightlife. You know what I mean? That's like, you know, like that's so mainstream. Like everybody, you know, goes out at night and parties. You know what I mean? Like it's hard to like convince someone that, oh, I'm passionate about putting this together. Like I don't give a fuck. I actually give a fuck about the music that's playing.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? How was it like knowing that you're gonna actually do this? Like, you know, you're a kid, like you're just DJing, like, you know, it's fun, but when did it become like, oh, like I'm actually like, this is not something I kind of like and could do. There's like something like that I really like want to do.
Well, dude, like I feel like it happened right away because I got lucky and it was like just timing and everything. But like right when I came into the scene, like my first era of DJing, which was from 15 to like 18, like we experienced success, you know? Like, so during that era, like we were getting booked to play OC. I played in Alaska, like as the last gig that I did under that era, like the pin, the mountaintop for that era was I went and DJed in Alaska for New Year's, like flown out, everything, you know? So it was like, in that era, I knew that I wanted to do this, but it was just such an immature perspective on it, you know? It was like, like, you know, what any teenager would think is, you know, being a successful artist. And then I think my perspective on the value of what it actually means evolved through time. Then after that, I had another era, and then I DJed with another homie, and then that also, we went to San Francisco. We were doing things that like showed that there was future and like, you know, like potential in what I was doing. And then that evolved into me making beats, and then I started singing, and then I did that for a little bit. That also had, you know, I played festivals, I did a lot of cool things, and then that evolved into playing with my band. And then with my band, we toured, we went to Mexico, we played Mexico City, Tijuana, like, you know. And then this new era that I'm in, it was like a full circle moment back to my origins, which is just like electronic music and like doing events, you know? So it just, I'm just been flowing with my artistic journey. And I feel like the whole time it's been, I've known that this is what I want to do, is just manifested in so many different ways. And I just kind of just roll with it every time it changes.
What's been the coolest show you play? Top three.
Top three shows. Dang.
Or that maybe they weren't even like the latest, but like you're like, oh, I'm proud of
it. Well, I think the Alaska one when I was 18, that was amazing because, you know, I think being flown out and it was New Year's, it was snowing outside. The event was like at an indoor water park. Mm. You know, it was very abstract. Like I'm outside smoking a joint and like it's snowing and there's girls in bikinis lining up and like dudes in shorts like trying to hurry up in because it's freezing. But inside it's like humid and there's slides and it's all like hot water kind of activity. No, it was nuts, you know, but it was like, so that show was like, I'll never forget it. You know, I think with my band, I think like we had like a 1 year anniversary show at the rooftop of the Fox Theater. That was like extremely memorable. You know, it's like the first time playing a show and like really hearing people sing the songs back to you and stuff like that, which that always hits like, you know, in a certain way. And then, I mean, right now, the current phase that I'm in right now, I feel like every show has just kind of been an experience in its own because I don't know, every event is different and like it, you feel so many different types of way depending where it is, what you're playing. You know, like how you woke up feeling that morning. So I think, I don't know, the top three is hard because I've played so many shows, like so many different types, you know?
Have you ever stopped DJing for like a long period of time?
Yeah, it was like when I started the band. So it's like I DJed from like 15 to like 23. And then at 23, I stopped and then started like the band stuff. Did that for like 3 or 4 years. So I stopped DJing for like 4 years, I guess, yeah.
For those 4 years, was there any... a bigger reason besides the band that you stopped?
No, that was it. It was just like, it was a creative choice, you know, because when you DJ, you're playing other people's music. And like, I just went down the rabbit hole of trying to make my own music. And it started with beats. And then I was like, well, let me try to sing. And then like, my voice sounded decent. So I was like, okay, well, let me explore this. Then I developed my voice a little bit. And then like, you know, well, you know, Dylan, then me and Dylan, like, you know, he was drumming for me on my beat stuff. And I was like, dude, like, you want to start a band? Like, you know, I grew up playing basic guitar. So I was like, I could play rhythm, you know, like, I know basic chords. And yeah, we just started a band. And that's kind of what like pulled me away from it. And then we made a lot of like really like amazing complex records, you know, with like different time signatures and like lyrics that like have double, triple meanings, and you know, just explore the artistic side of me that I think is like really important. And it was like, you know, it was an amazing era. And at the time, it's like I didn't really have, you know, any necessity to DJ because it's like we were just playing shows and I was just so about writing songs, you know, like putting lyrics and like finding new ways of saying things and like new melodies. So it was like different. But I think right now with like the current time frame and everything, because like having a band is like super hard. And it was just like DJing kind of just like, I accidentally came back to DJing. I didn't even really do it on purpose. I just DJed like a flea market for like my homegirl, and then it kind of just snowballed into me being like, wait, like I could do this again. And then now it just makes sense why everything kind of led to it, because it's like I'm back and it's like I'm doing things that are bigger than I've ever done in the electronic music realm. You know, but I always try to bring like the, because like I had like an, I have like an alternative band, so I was always trying to bring electronic elements to that, you know, kind of like what Provoker's doing. You know, I was trying to almost go in that direction of like band meets electronic, like how can we do more, like, you know, how do we bring autotune, how do we bring synth, how do we bring samples to the experience, you know. And yeah, and now I'm just like back in the electronic music realm, and that's just how everything kind of just unfolded.
Do you, what do you, what would you say, like, is the, your favorite part about being a DJ, like crowd-wise? Like, what is the favorite thing, like, the best feeling or sight you have, and what's, like, and what would you say it's, like, the worst thing of
that? Yeah. Well, I think the best thing is that, like, you're in charge of curating the sonics for any given room, you know. So if wherever you're DJing and the people are in that room, they are now at your mercy of what you want to play. And it's the, how you're saying, like the good and the bad, because the good is that I love my curation. I feel like I put a lot of thought into my music, and what I pick to choose, when I choose to play at any party or whatever, I'm putting a lot of thought into it. I'm working on it like a month in advance. Like, it's not just I'm here playing songs that are on my flash drive. It's like, you know, I've been carefully choosing these records because I feel like they would be a vibe for the night and for that moment that I'm DJing in. But that's also the bad part, is that, you know, you curate, but there's a chance that maybe the people that come don't understand the music or aren't ready to process those kind of sounds. And
do you have a story of a really bad night?
What happened?
Do you have a story of a really bad night?
A really bad night? Not necessarily, because also because I'm like a very anxious person, like I always wear shades and like I don't really look up. You know, so I always just work to please me, and it's like if I like what I'm playing, then that's fine. So I feel like I don't think I have a good record that I looked up so much that I knew that it was a bad night. I'm sure there was some, you know, and sometimes I would see clips, you know, like the next day, and it's like I played one of my favorite songs that I thought was the best, and I'm just having the best time, but then everyone's just kind of standing there, you know. So it's
does
like
that bum you out?
Not really, because it's like respectfully, I know more than them, you know what I'm saying? This is my passion, this is what I do, like that is my role. But you know, and I always know what songs I could play that are more pop hits that, yeah, they would get their crowd's reaction, but that's not the point. You know, if you want just whatever the whole city's playing, just go to any of these places, you know. It's there. The whole point is to try to like introduce people to new sounds, introduce people to things that might make them uncomfortable, but for good reasons, because in a few months it might be what they love the most, but they don't know it yet, you know. So it's like trying to expose people to sounds that they're not normally exposed to, you know. I'm not gonna just always play that same song that gets the party going, you know, just because I know that it will. Could I do that? Yes, very easily, but that's not my goal, you know. My goal is to try to like expose people to new sounds, create curiosity, and not only that, but create a subculture. Like, if this isn't the music that you like, you're in LA, there's a lot of other places you can go. But when you're coming to my events, to my sets, this is what it is, you know. If you don't understand it, that's cool. If you, you know, if you
don't want to. What makes your event your event? Like, what makes, like, what can people expect from your set?
Well, I think the only thing that can be expected is that it's the curation. Is that every time I'm gonna curate an experience, you know, and it's not always gonna be the same. It's always gonna be electronic based. Sometimes it's gonna be heavy. Sometimes it's gonna be light and rhythmic. Sometimes it's gonna be dark, like. But at the end of the day, it's curated by me. So it's like that is the attached, you know, that it's like if you've experienced it, or if you know me, if you listen to the kind of music that I listen to, you know, it's you almost just.
Hey, it's Kaylee. Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Start putting your trust in me that it's like, okay, this fool does electronic music stuff. I'm open to whatever he's going to curate and just trust that, like, what I curated is going to be an experience for you. Whether or not, you know, you like it or not, that's on you. But that's what makes my party mine, is that I'm the curator and I'm the one that's putting the thought into, well, if this person plays at this time, and then if that leads into this, this will be the vibe, you know? Or if I bring this person from New York or this person from Mexico City and mix them with this person from LA, you're going to get a sound clash that you would never have got because they're in two separate worlds. So I think that really is, at the end of the day, what is making what I do unique to me, is that I'm doing it. But I'm doing it with, like, so much intention that I think it shows... if you experience these events, you know, like, and if you're interested in that type of music, because that's like the biggest thing. If you don't like electronic music, then it's just not really going to be your place. You know,
how do you spend, well, what's your process to like put something to curate? Your stuff together, like, how does your process like find music, and second of all, like, do you go based on the night, place, date? Or, yeah, what's your mindset? Do you just, like you're on the story, like, Shazam your music?
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of what I just, like, I just, like, oh, I like this, and I just...
No, yeah, I'm a serial Shazammer for sure. Like, about, like, you know, to catching songs on the go. I always feel like it's, like, Pokemon. Like, if you're, like, driving somewhere and you hear a song, I'm always Shazamming for sure.
What else?
But for my parties, though, and my events, like, it starts with the love of music and, like, of... I use Spotify and SoundCloud. Those are my two avenues for music discovery. So it's like pretty much just deep diving. You know, it's like I love having my headphones on like as much as I can throughout a day. So and when I'm doing that, it's like either I'm listening to random playlists or I'm trying to, sometimes I'm trying to discover new music. Other times I'm just brushing up on stuff I saved that I've been storing. And I think once I start listening to music and also experiencing it live, I start developing like a vision, you know, like the party we had this past weekend with Bapari and Angel Dust. Like, Bapari was one of the first DJs in this new era of mine that I saw live on accident at like some rave in downtown, that as soon as I walked in, I was automatically like, whatever they're doing is right, because sonically it just wasn't what you normally get on a random Friday night, Saturday night. So it was like, so with them, they were like the artist that I wish I could book right off the bat. But when I first started my events, you know, it was like, I didn't have budgets. I didn't have anything, you know? So it's taking me some time to like build up my event and stuff. But it was like something like that. Like, I discovered Bapari at this event. I always knew that I wanted to book her, and then time passed, and then I got the opportunity to do so. And you know, that was, and then I paired her with Angel Dust, which is like, he plays a lot of like heavier, techno, industrial, you know, hardcore kind of stuff, but in the electronic sense, because electronic, you know, there's a hardcore and electronic. So
I'm not like, yo, electronic.
Yeah, you're like, no, man, there's only one hardcore, brother.
It's like, you're the wrong definition of hardcore.
I do that, like, listen to music, sonically try to discover artists that are doing things that are not, you know, the conventional, or, you know, just listening to a lot of music and just deep diving, and then, and connecting with other scenes, you know, because, like, with Mexico and stuff, like, I try to spend a lot of time in, like, Tijuana and Mexico City, trying to, like, just understand that scene and, like, you know, their sounds and how they move, and then trying to create that overlap and connection with LA and how things are done over here. But it's just a little bit of that, like, booking artists that, like, I personally think that their music and the way that they play is unique, and then pairing them with other artists as, like, you know, support to create, like, a lineup, you know? Like, on Friday, it was, like, me. I played, and then before Bapari, so I kind of, like, created a set that was like to set the tone. So I was like, okay, as people are walking into the warehouse, as it's filling up, this will be the opening music to that right before Bapari goes on and then really comes in with, you know, their curation and what they are going to choose to play, which was incredible. And then Angel does at the end because he just came in playing heavier stuff. And then that just kind of was the way, the thought that went into that event. So every event is different, you know. Sometimes I book, it's always going to be different. Sometimes I book artists that aren't heavy, that have more of a melodic and like happy rhythmic energy, and I have to do a whole nother flip for that, you know. I'm not going to pair them with heavy artists. I'm going to do a different, you know, curation for that event. And it just varies, you know, but it does stem from loving music and wanting to discover new music, you know. Because imagine, you know, because I think like the LA hardcore scene is cool, but it's just like the only thing I wish I could see is more bands that are like unknown but are good. You know, it's like, it seems like, of course, all the big bands, of course, are going to be playing the same lineups. But like, I just think like there's got to be a lot of hardcore bands that like don't have any traction or maybe need help coming from fucking the East Coast or whatever. And like, you know, I'm more so focused on like bringing exposure to the artists that aren't getting the exposure yet. You know, a lot of the artists that I've been booking in LA, it's their first time playing in LA. Not all of them, but like a lot of the artists that I do book, they've never even played here. So it's like bringing sounds and artists from other parts that like, you know, are, they're just not there yet to be that artist that's just getting chosen for the show, you know? So that's a lot, that's really part of it as well.
Well, that goes with my next question. Like, let's use hardcore as an example. Like, there's like punk, like the street, like crust punk, and then there's like, more on the nicer side of punk, and there's like hardcore punk, and there's that intertwines like power violence, and then there's like hardcore mainstream hardcore, that kind of intertwines with like pop punk, that intertwines with like just like more like, you know, it all kind of, but it all, it's separate, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like, or like grindcore, you know what I mean? That's a whole nother, you know what I mean? That doesn't intertwine with pop punk.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's all these different, and even in the little subgenres, there's different scenes. Is rave music the same, where it's like you're not gonna see the gothic dude at the Mexican like rave, like, you know what I mean? Like, is that like the same thing, or like, or if I were to go to rave, like kind of like a Baisa rave, you know what I mean? Am I gonna see the gothic like industrial person?
Or is
it the same?
Well, I feel like there's definitely subsections, because in electronic music, you know, there's techno, there's house, there's dubstep, there's trance, there's drum and bass, there's hardcore, there's guaracha, there's, you know,
that's tech, crazy.
There is a lot of different genres in the same sense. And yeah, like, you know, in the electronic world, the people who are into techno are the more goth looking ones. You go to a techno event, everyone's going to be in black for the most part. Okay. You know, they're more into that kind of world. The house, you're gonna get more of the dudes in the button-up shirts with, like, you know, showing a little bit of chest hair or whatever, you know. So it's like these each the same way. And then you get into the hardcore stuff, and then there you're gonna start seeing, you know, everyone who's more into the weirder, more exotic sounds that are more in your face. And it also does create, you know, but I think I'm a good example, because like I listen to all those genres and I go to all those events. So I think at the end of the day, like, you know, it comes down to your own musical preference. And like for me, like I, you know, in the electronic world, there's not really an electronic genre that I like less than the other. So I'm open to all of them. But in the world itself, especially with like the rise of techno and house becoming mainstream, it has created like, you know, a different set of people that go to these events and stuff. But at the end of the day, I feel like certain genres that like are uprising, that are currently like, you know, because DJs will switch, you know. It's like when I first started, I was DJing like, you know, like fidget, tech house, like real tech house, not like what people think tech house is now, because that changed. You know, I was playing like tribal, and I was playing mombaton, and like I was like doing these certain sounds. And then after that, I did house, and I was doing like house, G house. And then I had like that era where I was just doing house music, and then that ended. And then right now I'm just like on an open format kind of plateau of like just more so just trying to curate for any given space, but definitely leaning towards like electronic sounds that mesh well together. Like in my sets, you're always going to get a little bit of everything kind of mixed in. I'm not a techno DJ. I'm not a house DJ. I don't really play those genres per se, but things that are derivative of that, I do play, you know? So, yeah, I forgot the question.
Yeah. I was gonna say like hardcore or punk or metal.
Oh yeah, yeah.
People are on the separate, but like so the rave music, the rave world is kind of
mixed, and because you never know, you know, like who's gonna like what. And at the end of the day, I'm sure there's a lot of punks and a lot of hardcore people out there that do like electronic music. And you know, you do.
There's a lot.
There has to be. You know?
There's a lot.
Yeah, I mean, there has to be. And at the end of the day, you know, that's the whole point is, you know, whether or not they come to the shows, that's different. But I mean, I've seen punk foos at my shows, like, you know, like, and you know, because the way they dress, you could just tell they're punk foos and stuff. So it's like, it depends. You're not going to get like this, you know, it's not going to be obvious. But at the end of the day, it's like, I'm trying to create a space where my events, for the most part, cater to like Mexican culture and like Latin culture. I feel like I've done a lot of consecutive parties where all the DJs are Mexican, you know. Like, I don't promote it because I think that's lame to like use being Mexican as a reason to
get Latinx people. Event.
Come to the Latinx rave. No, it's like, I don't believe in exploiting your culture to get ahead. Yeah. So it's like, but if you look closely, read between the lines, you'll see that like I've done a lot of raves and events where all the DJs are Mexican, just because I feel like it's necessary. And in that, it's creating, you know, different types of people coming to these events, because again, I feel like maybe a lot of punk foos that do like electronic music don't go to these events is because they've gone and seen this demographic and been like, bro, these are not the type of people I'm trying to kick it with, you know. But I'm hoping to create like a certain subculture where there isn't really a, you know, there's not a uniform for, you know, if you know how to dress, if you know how to have a good time, you can come here and just chill, and no one's going to be pressed by like what your background is, you know, like what are your main interests are, what your aesthetic is or how you dress. I'm trying to create a space that like is inclusive. And well, I guess I can't say that, because like I am trying to like create a space that's inclusive for the freaks and for the people who are weirder and for the people who don't normally have a place to go to.
There's places for the open-minded
people. Yeah, for the open-minded, I guess. Yeah. But not even open-minded, because I mean, there's a lot of people that are open-minded that I wouldn't want at my parties. And it's like, not to make it racial, but it's like I don't know, like a lot of white people that like come to LA and like are living their like Hollywood fantasy and stuff, like I just got tired of going to parties that were all white, you know. Like I was got tired of going to raves or clubs, and it's like, I'm like, bro, it's like, it's there's really only a few Mexican people here. I don't feel included. I feel kind of weird. And just pretty much saying, well, what if I could flip it and I had a party that is mostly Mexican, and then the white people that do come, which they're welcome to, you know, it's like, but now they have to feel that feeling of like, shit, like I'm one of the only white people here. So right. they can.
You hear people talk Spanish, you hear songs that you never heard of. It's like,
exactly.
Now you're the weird one.
Exactly. Yeah. Now you're the one that has to feel that feeling that I felt. And not, you know, obviously you don't want anyone to feel that feeling, but I'm just focused on me and like, and the people that I think I represent, which is, you know, like I'm from Pomona, like, you know, like this West Coast, Southern California, like Mexican American culture that I think I represent. And that's why, since it's my event, that's what it's fueled by, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like I'm trying to put a reflection of why I'm in it, but it's like this Mexican American event that is presented to the world for anyone. But obviously, you know, again, normally when things are for, like, you can't even say the open mind, it really is for people who are freaks. You got to be down to listen to some stuff that's deconstructed, some stuff that some people would be like, bro, why are you putting this on, and don't understand it. It's like, I'm doing it for the people who are open to the...
So the Mexican-Americans are open-minded, basically.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't even know. It's really to everyone. But it's just like, that's, you know, that's where...
Well, they can relate to you. They can relate to your events.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
It's like, if you would be friends with that person, they most likely will like your event.
Yeah, it's, you know...
Unlike music, where it's like, your music could be... As long as it's good, it's like, you know what I mean? Like, you could like this song, even though you hate the person. But with rave music, it's like you're really showing your personality, because yeah. It's music that you like.
Yeah, and it's nice out. Because it's all intended. If you like to dance and let loose, like that's all it's for, you know what I'm saying? You don't need to pull up with anybody, you don't need to like have no one to dance with, like
pull up by yourself.
You could just be chilling in the side with, you know, just chilling, glasses on, close your eyes and just dance. Like if you feel the beat and you can dance and let loose, you know, you're gonna have a great time, because no one is there. Everyone's just doing the same thing. Everyone's facing the DJ. You know, that's how it is out here. Everyone faces the DJ, dances, and that's it. Like, it's not, you know, there's not much to it to, like, be a part of it. You just have to be down to, like, dance and have a good time and, like, feel the music and let it take you wherever it does, because the genres will change, the rhythms will change. You know, get later in the night, it gets heavier, whatever, you know?
Well, the next part is touring Mexico is crazy. Mm-hmm. Living in Mexico is crazy.
Mexico is something else.
Living in Mexico by itself is crazy.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of people born, like, in the U.S. and, like, primarily, like, lived their whole life in the U.S.
Yeah.
Once you go to Mexico, you're like, like,
no, it's
a whole nother, it's a whole nother body.
It's a whole nother world. And, like,
how was that touring Mexico?
It's something else, because, like, I've done two parties in Mexico City, and when we did them again, like, DIY, like, we found a house and, like, we brought the sound, all that stuff. And pretty much, like, the homie, he's from out there, he kind of, like, called me one day. He's like, hey, I just want to let you know, like, we need to have money on hand to pay the cartel just in case it comes by, and the cops just in case they come by. And it was like having that as like a pre-show talk, like, hey, we have to have money on hand so we can deal with this quickly if it happens. That if the cops come, you just give them this much and they leave. If the fools that work for the cartel come, they might ask for money, or they might just ask to just come into your event, you know? So it's like out there, like, the cartels regulate drug sales in all the events, so no one's allowed to sell in certain areas other than them. So it's like right away, it's like you got to make sure no one's selling in the restroom and stuff like that, because that's where the problems come. But that's a different kind of dynamic than putting together a show in LA, you know. It's like you don't have to worry about those kind of things. So I think that was like my biggest takeaway, was like having to be ready for those kind of dynamics of, like, you know, having to pay people off to keep the peace.
But and then even people who are partying, they're like partying with some weight on their shoulder. You know what I mean? Like, because you're partying, but you also got a low key, like,
no, for sure.
Even like going home, it's like the aftermath.
No,
like,
you know what I mean? Like, everything about it, it's a different kind of tension. Like, you know, I had a homegirl tell me a story about, she was partying and, you know, I think she took like MDMA or something, but like the seller for the event hadn't got there. So when he noticed that she was on something, he pressed her to figure out where she bought that MDMA while she was on it. And it was like things like that, where it's like you're getting pressed at the club by the dude that sells it, that works for some type of organized crime type of thing.
You're getting pressed for what you took.
Exactly. And they're asking you for bread, like, straight up. Like, you're not messing with these fools' money. And but then that's why it's, you know, it's pros and cons. Like, at the end of the day, for me, coming from like LA over there, like, fuck it, you know, it's their reality. And for me, it's like, you know, I'm entering it briefly for like whatever event I'm doing, but just being prepared for it and just handling it and, like, you know, trying to problem solve through it. Cause it's like, you can't change that. You can't change that society and the way that it's geared. But for a lot of people, that's their life, and that's what they have to deal with on a daily basis and any time that they try to organize, you know. But I also feel like that's why I think in Mexico City they have a lot of really passionate people. Like, the people in Mexico City that I feel that are really doing the underground shit and willing to risk it all, they're a little bit different, because think about the odds that they're having to, like, push against to just do something that we just do because we can, you know. Like, they have to be willing to risk a lot to be involved or to, you know, put events together.
No, yeah, I mean, there's a difference between, like, I'm gonna throw a party and be like, oh, I'm trying to throw a legit rave, I'm gonna fly out someone, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
I'm like, you know what I mean? It's like, you could just...
And you want to keep everyone safe, too.
Yeah, it's like, I'm like your homie, for example, you could have just, like, I'm gonna put a shelf on Spotify, bring people, you know what I mean, just party. But it's like, no, I'm trying to, like, I know what I like, and I know, like, what I'm doing, and I'm gonna do it right. And you know what I mean? That's...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But I don't know. I have a lot of respect for, like, you know, even like the homies in Juarez and like the homies in Tijuana, like, because my dad's from Juarez too. So it's like I have an extra soft spot for everyone from Juarez, because there's Juarez and Tijuana are like these border cities that, like, have taken turns being one of the most dangerous cities in the world, you know? So it's like right now Tijuana holds the seat for the most dangerous. Juarez for a long time was the most dangerous city in the world. Now it's Tijuana, and, you know, there's something different about people being willing to still create spaces, safe spaces for people to experience something that's so basic, which, like I told you, it's to go dance, to chill, to have a good time with your friends. You know, it's deeper than just doing drugs and being fucked up. It's really about decompression and, like, expression, you know, like being able to put on whatever you want to put on, show up and have a good time. But it's like, you know, everyone in Tijuana and Juarez that are still pushing through violence and, like, you know, oppression and all these things, and are still finding ways of creating these spaces for people. It's like, I have a different kind of respect for that because it's dense, you know, and like, I've been there, I've experienced it, and it's why I'm super for it. Like, right now I'm currently working on, like, doing my own party. I've DJed in Tijuana a good amount of times, but I'm about to do my party in Tijuana with a homie. So it's just like, continuing to push back on those spaces because the same way I see that importance too, you know? Like, it's important for people to also see that, like, it's not that taboo to go to these places. Yeah, they're dangerous, but it's like, bro, we live in LA. Like, we're not going to act like LA is, like, this safe space. There's hella blocks we can drive up right now. I mean, you could have a lot of problems that we don't want to have, but we're from here. We don't go down those blocks. You know what I'm saying? We stick to certain streets. We stick to certain areas. But I just don't like, that taboo from, like, even, like, you know, Mexican-American people that never been to Mexico, like, not understanding that it's like, bro, like, it's cool, you know? Like, yeah, it's dangerous, but it's no different than out here. You mind your business, you're going to, you know, you're not going to be doing no fuck shit. Like,
You got to learn.
You're not going to face any problems that you know how to respect the space. You know how to read a room. The room gets tense. You see some fools getting into some shit. Get the fuck out of there. It's not anything deeper than being street smart and just knowing how to move, but obviously some people don't have that. And it's why, like, I always give speeches to the homies. When the homies come with us to TJ for a weekend or something, I always gotta make sure, like, yo, hey, I'm just saying this just to say it because it needs to be said. Someone looks at you funny, look away. Someone steps on your shoes, too bad. Like, it's like, bro, like, this is not the place for you to think that you can, you know, be a tough guy or, you know, and it's where you end up in those kind of scenarios. It's like, bro, it's a different world. Out here, you will disappear, and then only because you're American, maybe they'll try to find you, but they probably won't. You know, that's just reality for these people out here. Like, it's not a game. It's not, like, it's to be taken serious where, you know, I think in the U.S. and, like, Cali, Los Angeles, like, people take that shit for granted. Say, oh, yeah, well, I'll just get in this fight and then I'll just get out of jail in the morning or whatever. No, bro, like, it's not that kind of world. And just respecting the land and, like, the people is all you need to really just enjoy Mexico. You know, it's like, even if you don't speak Spanish, like, you're with someone that speaks Spanish, you're cool. Learn when not to talk, you know, if it comes to that. You know, we're talking to cops because we're getting pressed, don't say anything. You know, it's just knowledge that you just have to have, that, like, I'm lucky enough to have built over experience and, like, going into Mexico so much as a kid. I feel like, and then speaking Spanish, like, perfectly fine, like, you know, I don't have a problem communicated in Spanish, so it makes it easy for me to navigate these spaces and not keep myself out of trouble, you know, like, not get into something I don't want to be in. And yeah, just like, and again, let the magic of that shine, because once you make it through all that adversity, there's this really beautiful, unique moment that you can only experience in these places. What I experienced in Tijuana, super unique to what that place has to offer. What I experienced in Juarez, very unique to that place. What I experienced in Mexico City, super unique to that territory. So I'm saying, like, the land itself has, like, something magical about it that, like, you know, with the people that gather, the people that come to these events, the people you meet, and it's, I don't know, there's something really special about it that, like, I'm super for. And I kind of just want to break the taboo of, like, you know, it's like, going to Mexico isn't as, it isn't,
it can be done.
It you can go to Mexico and come back and it's fine, bro.
Yeah.
Like,
and you're gonna be 30.
Yeah.
You're gonna be 30. You're not some guy who, like, just, like, you know what I mean? Like, you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
You definitely know what you're doing. You have outside curated knowledge to do what you're doing. You're very passionate. You know what I mean? Like, you're in a very, in a way, like, you're in a very popular business in the sense that a lot of people do it.
Yeah.
But you're in a very niche side of it where you're, like, actually, like, it's DIY. It's not just, you know what I mean? It's not like you're not going, like, it's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah.
But that being said, you think you're going to be doing this, like, forever? Do you see yourself, like, stop doing it and, like, do something else with your life?
I don't think so. I mean, I feel like this life has everything
that you want,
that I want, and what I need, because, like I told you, like, it keeps evolving. And I don't want to think about what it's going to evolve into next, but where I'm at right now is perfect. Like, you know, like, right now I feel perfectly grounded. You know, I'm glad that, you know, I'm dealing with all these things at 29, You know, it's like when I was 15, I made a lot of mistakes. When I was 21, I made a lot of mistakes. When I was 24, I made a lot of mistakes. But right now, the mistake margin is very, very slim. I'm not making that many mistakes. I'm more so applying knowledge and I'm like executing. So I'm more so in like right now trying to like, I'm trying to create an empire, which is like DT33, you know, like it's this multimedia experience that, you know, it won't always be events. Sometimes it will be, you know, it's like, and I'm still developing the concept, but again, I don't want to think about necessarily what, how long or whatever, because like every time it just keeps evolving. You know, when I was younger, I used to see like turning 30 as like this crazy thing. Like I was like, well, if by 30, I don't have this and that, I'm not going to do it. I'm quitting. I'm going to just do something normal. But now that I'm here, it's just like, yo, like, no, it's just, you realize how normal it is to struggle for something you want, that at the end of the day, like, we all make our choices. And, you know, like I'm moving more towards production, and realistically production is forever. You know what I'm saying? Events and spaces are always going to exist. And whether or not I end up just becoming like a creative director or like an executive producer, you know, those are realities that I can live from here till whenever, you know, at least until retirement, which what is for normal people that work normal jobs, like 60 or something. I don't know. Yeah. I'm either, but you know, I mean,
like your life, like the more you like, if you have passion for anything, art, music, punk, whatever the fuck, even, I don't know, whatever the hell, if you have passion for something, you're gonna dig through those, through that tunnel, and you realize that life isn't black and white.
Yeah. And that
so your life doesn't have to be black and white.
At all. Literally not. It's not that. It just...
You can get married tomorrow, so be a DJ.
Yeah.
You can have a kid, so be a DJ.
For sure. There's not really anything, you know. And even that, it's like, it's events, it's gatherings, you know, and those events and gatherings can change, and the music I'll play will change.
You can stop being a DJ and still throw events.
Literally.
You know what I mean? Either or. It's like,
there is no, like...
You're not going to just be the guy, like, who's... You know what I mean? You could do whatever. Like,
it's why I'm just open to whatever comes next, but right now, this, like, DT33 thing is... I see something that I haven't seen in any of my other projects, and it's just like that global connection that I've always wanted of, like, you know, creating ties with Japan and Brazil and New York and fucking Mexico, like that. And that's what I've always wanted, is just to create this, like, you know, connection with the world that allows me to see the world at the same time I'm making money to survive, and, you know, at the same time, just being that creative that I want to be inside, you know, and not limiting myself and just exploring it to its full potential. And just like, again, you know, maybe I do choose to not be a creative one day, but I just, you know, I don't know. Whatever's next, I'm down. But like right now, I have a very fixed goal and vision. And I don't know, I'm not really, I'm definitely thinking steps ahead, but not that ahead. You know, to what's next. I'm thinking,
you're doing what you want, but you're doing it right.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Anything else you want to say?
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was cool.
Yeah. Thank everybody for listening.